From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Andrea Lorien, filling in for Mitch Wortlieb. It's Thursday, December 19th, and here are today's headlines. An environmental organization says Vermont is on pace to miss a key emissions reductions mandate by the equivalent of 785 million vehicle miles traveled. State law requires Vermont to hit carbon pollution reduction benchmarks in 2025, 2030, and again in 2050. State officials say they're on track to meet the first deadline, but Elena Mahaly with the Conservation Law Foundation says the state used a faulty modeling tool to calculate greenhouse gas emissions.
And what's frankly so alarming is that the agency has spent the last year telling the Climate Council, the leaders of our state legislature, and the public that we are on track.
The foundation is asking a judge to force the state to adopt emissions reduction initiatives needed to achieve the 2025 mandate. The state has asked the court to dismiss the case. The board of an East Montpelier electric co-op has approved the sale of the Wrightsville Hydro Plant. Washington Electric Co-op is authorized to sell the plant for no less than $1 million, the Hardwick Gazette reports. Though some board members appreciate having a renewable energy source in Washington Electric's portfolio, others say the hydro plant is too expensive to operate, given the wattage it provides. The board has identified a potential buyer interested in taking advantage of Vermont's net metering programs for renewable energy systems. The Department of Taxes is calling for sweeping changes to how towns collect their property tax information. Jill Remick is with the agency. She says when towns don't do regular reappraisals, it throws off the whole system.
When a town does a reappraisal now and you're changing your value from what it might have been maybe 15 or 10 years ago, there's a lot of sticker shock.
A new report from the Department of Taxes says property data should be collected regionally and not town by town. It also recommended having paid professional staff take over property data collection from local listers and appeal officers. And construction on Winooski's Main Street revitalization project has paused until spring. City officials say the project completed its first construction season earlier this week. The Weaver Street detour has been taken down, and two-way traffic has been restored for the winter. This year, crews replaced a majority of the nearly 100-year-old water and sewer lines in the area, and upgraded gas lines and stormwater systems. Major construction is expected to resume in the spring. Crews will focus on reconstructing the road and adding sidewalks. Coming up, reporter Erica Heilman speaks to a social services provider who grew up middle class, though he prefers the lower class. That's after this. Mark LaRoche is the director of shelters and facilities at Good Samaritan Haven in Barrie, which serves the unhoused population in central Vermont. Mark lived with severe addiction from his early teens through his late 30s. He was in and out of jail in those years, and in this episode of What Class Are You, he talked with reporter Erica Heilman about how addiction is its own sort of class. First, here's Mark talking about his childhood in Rutland, and a fair warning that some of the language in this story is a little coarse.
We're a big church family, so everything was related around middle or upper class. I don't know. I mean, you're strictly Catholic. Strictly Catholic. All the friends that came over, all of them, they would all fit into one bracket. There wasn't much diversity there, and that's not just a color thing. That's in general. Very specific type of people, thoughts.
Well, where did you find comfort?
Reality for me, I thrive in the lower class. I like the lower class. And things are just a bit more genuine. Middle class is competition. That's all that's about. F***ing the Joneses and who has a bigger g***ing boat. Rich people are just, they live in a whole different reality. Here I am struggling to do a down payment on g***ing RV. But my mom can drop 20 grand on a 3-year lease on a Carvey. Like it's nothing.
How old were you when you started to see class distinctions in your school or in your...
What was that, 6th grade? Depending upon where the parents are at, that tends to start way before that, where you don't want people hanging out with this one, that one, and the other one. Parents don't want their kids hanging out with certain people. certain demographics. Rutland was as divided by where you lived, what side of Killington Ave or Route 4 you're on. And yeah, it would have, parents try to direct you in a certain way, force you to be friends with this family or that one because you went to church with these ones. But you can always step backwards and go into the lower class and always be accepted. The lower class is much tighter because they don't give a shit. They're not going to bicker over things. They're not going to compare things. They don't have much to compare. Noticed it when I was in Danby for years. They all lived in single wide trailers that, given what I grew up in, I mean, it's just the dumps. But they have brand new RVs, brand new boats, brand new snowmobiles. They're genuinely happy. They take vacation like every month. They all go hang out. Yeah, they drink their beer and watch NASCAR, but they are genuinely happy. And not many people are. I see a lot of miserable people in office buildings.
So you're in the middle class, living in a house or whatever on the right side of Killington Avenue, whichever side that is. Do you have a story about a friend or an experience where you suddenly had an insight into, oh, I like that, not this?
There wasn't a point that I ever once said, I prefer this class over the other. I had a friend live down the street. There were 8 kids in that house. The neighborhood hated them. And then a single mom with a junkie husband who was explosively violent. But he was my closest friend growing up. And they didn't have a pot to piss in. He thought I lived in a mansion. Lived in a 3-bedroom raised ranch. You know, $140,000 house at the time. Not a $1 million mansion, but it was easier. It was more comfortable. There's no judging either.
At his house?
Yeah, you'll find a truer person the lower you go.
You're talking about your friend and the family, that you felt more comfortable there. What's the flip side of that? Because you're talking about people who don't have enough. So what's the dark part of that?
They'll never get anything. College wasn't something that's going to happen for any one of those 8 kids. Not without some kind of crazy scholarship. Because right now, they're just 8 white kids from lower class. They're not going to get far. Lower class just means less access, less resources. What's the point?
Is addiction a class of its own?
Addiction is likely the worst class of all of them, yes. It always has been, though, and that's not going to change. Without proper representation of that world. How many addicts do you see in the State House? None. Honestly, I would like to see 4 or 5 representatives in that State House with needles popping out of their arm. Because then at least you know there isn't a proper voice for the addict world. I think it's half the backbone of America's addiction. We're the working class. We're the ones that are cleaning up your messes. The person that is coming to your house to trim your trees. People mowing all year long, doing all the work. They're all, I'd say at least half of the service industry is supported on backs of addicts. Half your restaurants, half your wait staff. Everywhere. It is so much bigger than people think it is.
You're saying that a huge percentage of people who are working jobs have addiction issues. Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, people say addiction is not class conscious. That people from all levels of, you know, the socioeconomic strata struggle with addiction. So how is addiction and class related?
You're wealthy, you can go to rehab. You can go to a good rehab that isn't 2 weeks in Vermont. Anybody living in poverty, they have no means of getting out of it. Everywhere I send people, I send them to rehab knowing they are going to come back to the same thing. They are going to fail again. The guilt, shame that comes with that. It's horrible to do to somebody. But what is there in Vermont to get clean for? Why? Look at the housing. I went looking for a place up around here, 2 years ago? I couldn't find anything. And I have a decent, well, not at the time, but credit score is good now. I still wouldn't find anything. And there's just not a lot in Vermont worth giving a fuck about. What? Rent is what, $2,000? utilities, car. Sure, I can, even I can pay that. I won't be able to live, though. You're not going anywhere, not doing anything. What kind of life is that? It isn't, so people don't bother. And I don't blame them. Vermont sucks. I love Vermont. Absolutely fucking love it. I hate living here.
This is Erica Heilman with Vermont Public.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Peter Hirschfeld, Adia Golson, Howard Weiss-Tisman, and Nathaniel Wilson. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Andrea Lorien. Talk to you later.